From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Welcome into the noon hour of the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue here on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned, also owners of Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. Two Edley's Barbecue locations open right now, 12 South and Sylvan Park. Another one, East Nashville, opening soon. They're reopening, and they are hiring. That's right, they are hiring, which is great news for everyone out there to hear that local businesses are in the process of hiring again. Edleysbbq.com/jobs if you're interested in a job with them. And you can download the Edley's app and order at any time as well. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you on this Friday. David Reed is our producer. Stephen Godfrey will join us coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. We were talking earlier about Philip Fulmer being the lone SEC athletic director that was not in agreement that everyone should get back on campus and be together starting June 1st. He wants to wait a little bit longer. Ricky in West End tweets and said, so how is Philly boy cheating the system currently and wanting to continue the lockdown so that Tennessee can benefit from the lockdown more? Was his question. I considered this question seriously, and I honestly can't think of a single thing that Tennessee would be doing that could benefit them for 2 weeks.
That's how good his that's how good his scheme is. We can't think of it. That's what Rick's saying.
What is Tennessee doing to cheat the system? Because when you allow just the student athletes back on campus, you're not allowing recruits to come on campus. So if Ricky's thought was they're doing so well during the lockdown with virtual recruiting, and then once other schools can have recruits on campus, they're not going to do as well. Well, that doesn't really make sense here because it's just the current team that would show up. So are they holding like illegal workouts or practices somewhere off site and they want another 2 week jump on everyone? Is that what Ricky is saying? I have no idea. But Ricky, I considered your question thoroughly and honestly, and I can honestly tell you, I can't think of a single thing that Philip Fulmer would be doing illegally that 2 weeks to return to campus would help Tennessee that greatly, that he would be the one person with a dissenting opinion. The more likely outcome with this is that Philip Fulmer honestly believes they should wait to return to campus, which I know is difficult to believe for a lot of people, but that's probably his honest opinion that they need to wait and spend some more time before allowing student athletes back on campus. Anyway, wanted to respond to that and say I don't have an answer to Ricky's tweet on that. You can always tweet us, by the way, at Midday180. Ask your questions there, thoughts on the show, whatever you want to say. Big thanks to everyone last night who took part in our Midday Mixer presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. Always a good time. Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, home of the original Tennessee whiskey as well as Bellmead Bourbon and many other fine spirits made with loving care in Nashville. Had a great group in the room. Terrific conversation back and forth. I think learned a little bit about our show and what everyone in that room thought about. Paul, this is fun for us because it's a chance to have some drinks and tell some stories and hear some stories from some of our favorite listeners and season ticket holders of the show. But it also serves as a great focus group for the Midday 180 moving forward, where we get to hear some honest assessment of the show and what people like and what they don't like. So it's been helpful for us in a lot of ways. And we really do appreciate everyone who's taken part in it.
A lot of feedback, but not in a boring or stoic way by any means. Just like a get together. I mean, it's, you know, it's not the same as hanging out at a bar, but right now it's the best we can do. And I think everybody had fun or did a good job lying and saying that they had fun. And we appreciate that, whether it's truth or fiction. It seemed like it was truth. I had a good time. I had several drinks. I found these nice tonics. I'm a big believer in, I'm not going to remember the name of the mixer now, but they've made them in cans now, Fever Tree. Made them in cans now that are just the size for one cocktail. And so you don't have to measure anything out. It's perfect amount of mixer for one cocktail. And I was enjoying that tremendously.
Yeah, they have at the liquor store I go to here in Mount Jewett, they have those little single serve, like old fashioned mixers that I have a couple of. That it's the perfect amount for a glass of bourbon and then pour it in for an old fashioned. I enjoy those as well. It was great seeing Charlie Nelson also brothers Charlie and Andy Nelson, the founders of Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. He was great. He has a good time in those, and he was popping back and forth throughout. So great of Charlie to join us last night. Always a good time with those midday mixers, and we should be having one again next Thursday. So if you're interested, if you want in, message us, Midday180 on Twitter, message us on Instagram, Facebook, wherever you can get us. Just send us a message if you want in on next Thursday night's mixer. Headlines out there, and also, by the way, Stephen Godfrey from Banner Society will join us here in about 5 or 10 minutes, and we'll get back into a lot of college football issues, reopening, when are people going to be back on campus. We'll get into all those issues in depth with Stephen Godfrey coming up. James Harrison had an appearance on the Going Deep podcast, and he was asked about the biggest fine he received during his career, and he told the story of the hit on Muhammad Massaqua of the Cleveland Browns in 2010. The hit was not flagged in the game, but it concussed Massaqua. He was fined $75,000 for the hit. Now, the key part of this story and what people are talking about is James Harrison then said on the podcast that the coolest thing that Mike Tomlin ever did was after that hit, he walked up to him and handed him an envelope after the NFL levied the fine. Now, he didn't clarify if it was for the full amount or if he was helping him out with the fine or what exactly happened. But, Paul, I'm guessing that Mike Tomlin does not appreciate James Harrison telling that story, because now he's going to be answering questions about that and how he may have helped out with a cash payment to one of his players to help pay for their fine because of an illegal hit.
No, and this has led to a ton of response. Art Rooney issued a statement saying that this did not happen. James Harrison's agent, who is retired but remains close with Harrison and still does some work with him, denied it and said he would know if this happened and he doesn't know anything about it. And then Sean Payton, who was on the radio, unbelievably why he would be on the radio with Jason Lockin for, I don't know, said, who was obviously suspended for a year for Bountygate, said that he doesn't expect the league to look into this at all, throwing darts like the other side of this, where a coach would help out a player with paying a fine, the league won't care about at all, but they sure screwed me out of a year of work and a year of salary. So three prominent people with opinions on this, two of whom would have known about it, saying they deny it. Harrison hasn't resurfaced to say anything. We haven't heard from Tomlin yet, as far as I know. Sean Payton pissed off at the whole thing because he didn't think it'll be investigated. There's always kind of speculation that that a team or a coach would help out. I would think that James Harrison maybe was making more money than Mike Tomlin at the peak of his powers. So, you know, does that money come from Mike Tomlin? Does that money come from the organization, if in fact it's happening? There are a lot of unanswered questions here and a lot of things to speculate about. The Steelers strike me as an organization that would not do that. The Raiders are an organization that strikes me as somebody that would do that. So that adds more intrigue to it for me as well.
Well, does Mike Tomlin, though, strike you as someone that would do that? That's the question here. I don't think this was an organizational decision. I can absolutely see Mike Tomlin with his personality being the type to give his guy, I don't think he paid him $75,000 in an envelope, but he may have given him $5,000 or $10,000 to help pay for it and kind of as a sign to the team that, hey, this is how we play here. The hit wasn't even flagged. James Harrison went on to say, I went at it about 50% on that hit. I was trying to knock the ball loose on the play. He said, if I knew I was getting fined $75,000, I would have tried to kill him and got my money's worth on it. And that was not his intent on the play. So maybe it was Mike Tomlin making a statement that way. Either way, I applaud the honesty in stories like this when people go on shows and podcasts. I hope stories like that continue to be told. That being said, I'm pissed off if I'm Mike Tomlin and the Steelers.
I'm watching the hit right now, but it's playing so loud in my ears, the volume, and I can't mute that and hear you at the same time, so I have to wait for the commercial. I don't remember it. Do you remember it?
I don't remember it. Out of all the hits from the Steelers, when I think of hits, I think of Steelers, Bengals. I think of Ravens. I think of those three teams in a round robin. I don't think as much about the Browns of that era and a hit on them. So, no, I don't really remember it either. And according to James Harrison, he didn't get his money's worth on it, and he would have hit him worse if he knew he was getting fined $75,000.
They were wearing the yellow brown uniforms in this game against the Browns. I am now watching it.
And, Stephen Godfrey joins us normally on Thursdays with Banner Society to talk college football. Had to move this week to Friday. So up next, Stephen Godfrey talking about the plan to return to college football and the issues surrounding it. It's the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
The 3HL Talks Titans with Jim Wyatt, presented by Accurate Mortgage. Tuesday afternoons at 3:30 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you. David Reed is our chairman of the board. Jonathan Hutton will be back on Monday. It's been a fun week here on the show. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. Thanks to everyone who took part in our Midday Mixer last night, presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery as well. We are trying to connect right now with Stephen Godfrey. He joins us weekly, normally on Thursdays, but this week had to move to Friday, so we're trying to connect with him to talk a little college football and when possibly to return to campus for these different schools. We talked with Clay Travis about the issue surrounding the state of California with COVID-19 and how that could affect some programs there. A lot of different issues with unintended consequences with some of these decisions that the NCAA is going to have to make some tough calls on at some point. As we continue to try to connect with Stephen Godfrey, we'll hopefully talk to him soon. Some headlines out there also. Former Georgia football standout and first-round draft pick DeAndre Baker has a warrant issued for his arrest regarding an incident that occurred May 13th in Miramar County, Florida. DeAndre Baker, along with Seahawks cornerback Quentin Dunbar, reportedly being charged with 4 counts of armed robbery with a firearm and 4 counts of aggravated assault with a firearm. This was first reported by Adam Schefter of ESPN. According to law enforcement, Dunbar and Baker accused of having stolen several luxury watches. Both NFL players were seen at a party prior, and they lost upwards of $70,000 on a high-stakes poker game. The same report says Baker whipped out a semi-automatic weapon at one point when an argument broke out at the cookout in Miramar, Florida. Paul, this is certainly not a good look. When I saw armed robbery for 2 NFL players, one being a first-round draft pick, making a ton of money, that jumped out to me. Then you find out there was some sort of $70,000 loss at a high-stakes poker game, which makes me think that they thought they were cheated in the game and maybe came back for retribution and tried to steal some jewelry from the guys that did it. I don't know what happened, but either way, a bad look for both those guys.
I think it's the end of both of those guys in terms of us hearing about them in any kind of NFL-related news. And now it'll be crime-related news, court-related news, conviction-related news, jail term-related news, jail release-related news. It seems like innocent till proven guilty, obviously, but does not sound very good for them at all. And hasn't been a big headline like this very often lately. The league obviously likes it that way, but these guys didn't do them any favors. Not good.
Paul, I'm curious because I asked this question to Clay Travis also about his website, and you know he's hiring people and adding different things to it right now. Curious about your take on paulkuharski.com. And sort of how you've, you know, everyone's adjusting to a life where routine is different. There's not live sports to discuss. Certainly how you cover the Titans is different. How the Titans operate and go about their business is totally different. What has your approach been at paulkuharski.com with that?
Well, forging ahead, there has been, you know, a reasonable amount of stuff to build off of. And need to get more creative, generally speaking. I don't know that I've done as well as I need to do, but I will. Looking to mix in more multimedia. So last week, even as I took the week off to line up with my furlough, I got a podcast in today. You know, I think I probably will do a big Periscope Facebook Live in lieu of forcing myself to write something when I don't necessarily have something. And then I need to maybe do more bigger, wider looks at things that maybe aren't the things that I generally do. But my people have been faithful and loyal. We've done some different things. Like I've got, I think I told you guys, this enormous stack of books that come in, and I'm sure you have much the same, to be kind of reviewed or to get us ready for a segment that we do with an author on a subject. And amongst my members, I've been giving away those books that create a conversation about the subject matter of the books on the private Facebook page, where we talk about them and people make their case that they want the book. And I make a periodic trip to the post office and send those out kind of as a bonus item and stuff like that. So it's a different landscape, obviously. It's a different landscape at this time of year anyway, where I try not to get too excited about seeing Laurel Murchison in an OTA session, and I come back to you guys and say, you know, he looked good, but and so I don't have to fight those urges right now in the way that I generally do at an April or May workout. But you know, the real question is going to be about when training camp rolls around and when games roll around and if we're going to be allowed to be there in the way that we're used to. And if we're not, it's a real change of the game. And, you know, I still hope to bring people the best out of what access we have. But if access is a big change, there's going to be a lot of adjusting. And who adjusts best, who adjusts most creatively is going to be a big key to the game.
You mentioned books. Are people reading right now? You know, we spent so much time talking about things that we're streaming. And, of course, we're doing a podcast on The Wire, so we have to keep up with that and watch it. By the way, finished season 3 last night, so we'll be recording a season 3 recap of The Wire soon. You can check that out on Midday 180 On Demand podcast page. But I am curious, Paul, because you mentioned books. I know Angie, my wife, is reading a lot more. I am not doing any reading right now. I should be, but more reading things online and obviously working on the show, but also watching things on TV. Of all the things that could see a spike and an uptick, I am curious if America's reading more right now.
I think a share of America is reading more right now. I wish my son was on that list, going beyond his 20 required minutes a day. Occasionally he gets caught up in something and goes further, but he's not caught the bug the way I would like to see it. I've told you, you know, I've got a stack of stuff that I want to read. I've also got a major problem where I can't stay awake when I read. And so these two things do not coexist well. What do I do? Do I wear some kind of buzzer?
Like no-dos?
Do I read? Am I a walk reader where I walk around the block as I read?
Well, the problem that you described to us is you can read things online fine. It's actually reading a book that you're having problems with. It's not
online. I last long.
Right, because the screen is keeping you awake. That's what it is. It's artificially feeding sunlight into your brain. Your brain thinks you should be awake. I don't think this is something that's you know, specific just to you. I'm kind of the same exact way. Got a brand new book this week that I've tried to start reading every day since I've gotten it, and it has not happened.
Or 2 pages?
No, I'm still reading the foreword.
I mean, it's really bad. But I will say, I had this in college. I would go to the library. I would really, like today, I've really got to make some major progress on this, and I would get sleepy and fall asleep even in college. So it's not an old man thing. It's a problem I've had for some time, and it's why in college I had very good attendance. I found in college, for me at least, you could a lot in a lot of classes. If you weren't going to be able to do everything, you could get away with going to all of the classes and not doing all of the reading, or doing all of the reading and not going to all of the classes. And I certainly was in the go to all of the classes, soak up all of the lectures, and get by with doing as much of the reading as you could. I was never one of the people that could do all the reading and survive without the lectures. And so if anybody wants to deliver some lectures on some of these books that I want to read, that would come in handy.
We've touched base.
Says audio books. I mean, but what am I, I'm going to sit down and listen to an audio book in my house. I'll do an audio book if I'm going on a drive, you know, if my family vacation to Florida happens, but sitting around the house listening to an audio book seems weird.
We've touched base with Stephen Godfrey from Banner Society. He will join us next talking college football, talking possibly returning to campus, all the issues surrounding that. Stephen Godfrey, Banner Society, next. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
As we shelter in place, we're still bringing you the best in sports talk. The Sports Station. 104.5 The Zone.
It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue here on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you. David Reed, our chairman of the board. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned, open in 12 South and Sylvan Park right now, and they are starting the reopening process at their East Nashville location, and they are hiring, which is great news. If you're interested, edleysbbq.com/jobs. Stephen Godfrey joins us every week on the show. Banner Society does great work there, talking college football. Godfrey, welcome in, man. How are you?
I'm good. Sorry about the confusion, but I'm here now.
No problem at all. I want to start here. There's a story coming out today that Philip Fulmer is the lone dissenting opinion among SEC ADs about coming back to campus on June 1st. Philip Fulmer thinks they should wait to June 15th or maybe make it indefinite. Every other AD in the conference wants to return on June 1st. I did not have Philip Fulmer as the person who would want to wait it out and return later, as opposed to the other athletic directors in the conference. What do you make of that story, Godfrey, when you hear it?
I mean, I don't want to say I don't believe it, because I feel like that would slight Fulmer in a way that he doesn't necessarily deserve. But, I mean, it's very shocking. Usually someone who is an ex-football player, an ex-football coach, is going to lean into more of the kind of rub some dirt on it mindset, you know, and this is a lot of foresight on Fulmer's part. I think it's interesting, Chad, actually, as I say that, this is a guy with college football coaching experience. He won a national championship in the modern era, right? We're not talking about a long, long time ago. And I think if he is not concerned with bringing back players as soon as humanly possible, I think there's a much better argument to be made that a lot of this hand-wringing I'm hearing in the coaching circles about, like, I mean, I just don't even know if we can play if I can't coach him in May. I think a lot of that is starting to fall apart.
Well, and the interesting part of this is, and again, if you buy the story, Kentucky Sports Radio reported it first. But in the story, the response from the other ADs was exactly what you're saying, Godfrey, that, oh, we can't possibly get our teams ready if we come back June 15th. And I'm thinking, June 1st versus June 15th, what is the big difference there? I'd get it if they said you can't come back till August 1st and how it'd be difficult to get a team ready to play a football season if you came back August 1st. But June 1st to June 15th, is it really that big of a difference where you couldn't have a football season if you waited 2 weeks?
Well, I think the California thing is something that we should consider as being a, I don't want to say threat. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as possible here, because I think so much of these conversations now have just become politicized. But what's going on in California is a conversation topic in regard to the entire season being different, or, you know, amended, or not having certain teams in it or something like that. June 1st or June 15th does not matter at all, at all. You know, I was talking with a coordinator in the Ivy Leagues, and you can laugh and say, oh it's the Ivy Leagues, except like Oklahoma State just hired an OC from the Ivy League. So, I mean, it's as coaching staff, they're highly respected in college football. They are. And for years, you know, the Ivies don't get their hands on the players all the time. At D2, you know, the FCS, most coaches don't get the access to the players essentially year-round, which is what we've built in the FBS, especially in the Power 5. and yet they're still able to play football in September. It is absolutely possible. I think the argument is starting to fall apart as we see it.
Yeah, it's I was shocked's the right word, but surprised when I saw that with Philip Fulmer being the one wanting to wait to return. It's going to be interesting to see how all these different campuses handle this. It's been interesting to see how Jeremy Pruitt and his Tennessee staff has handled the quarantine and the social distancing from a recruiting standpoint, and how they've been able to capitalize during this. I'm trying to pinpoint, Godfrey, what it is about that staff or about Jeremy Pruitt where they're the ones that capitalize more than any other program during this time. And all I keep coming up with, I guess, is, isn't this kind of what you'd eventually expect from a staff like this one that's recruited everywhere in the SEC and that's being paid what they're being paid in terms of where they rank nationally and staff salary?
Yeah, and I think that, again, I feel like every week you and I, it's like we're trying to get a little clearer, a little bit more focused on exactly who Jeremy Pruitt is going to be and what the Pruitt era is going to be for Tennessee. And the only thing that I think that the entire, you know, media, Tennessee people, non-Tennessee people, we can agree on is that, like, we don't really know yet. But you start giving him the benefit of the doubt and looking at the fact that they're recruiting extremely well. It is an off period, a quiet period. You know, some of the bigger programs have not really sharpened in, you know, in terms of total verbal commitments right now. Obviously, there's a lot of programs that don't have them. I think, again, this is like the rosiest picture I can paint. But I think what's happening with Tennessee is you hired a Saban mantra recruiting staff that has that evaluation philosophy. You would think now that Fulmer said, take your time and don't reach for stars. Don't fight for short-term wins to battle perception. What I think he said, I think what we're seeing now is he said, take your time, evaluate, you know, find your our guys, right? You know, that's the big thing. Is that guy our guy? Our OKD, our kind of guy. I think that's starting to happen. And I also think that these guys are trained from Alabama and from Georgia and from all these other premier staff on how to recruit. So maybe this was always going to pay out. I think Chad, what's interesting to me is this related to COVID at all, or were we going to see this kind of return on investment as we rounded the corner into year three, no matter what?
Something else that's come to mind during all this, you know, Mark Emmert in the NCAA has said that we're not going to be in the decision-making process of when football starts back or when, you know, people are participating in sports again. It's going to be up to the ADs, the states, and the school presidents on things like this. To which I'm thinking, in a weird way, does COVID-19 and what's going on right now make the NCAA even more inferior than it was before? In terms of a decision-making body for college sports?
Well, don't be shocked. I'll say this. Look, they're in the business of shirking responsibility and exercising authority. And what I mean by that is they want to bring the thunder down when it comes to things like enforcement. But when you actually go through the enforcement process or the appeals process or any of the litigation processes with the NCAA, this could be for a recruiting violation or a kid's eligibility, it doesn't matter. What the NCAA is always going to do is bring the hammer, and then as they swing it, say, we're not responsible for any of this. Because they always go back and say, well, it's the membership. It's the membership, right? This is their MO. I'll be honest, though. I wasn't shocked about this one because they actually don't have any power. College football is decentralized, right? It has no Adam Silver. It has no Roger Goodell. I almost said Paul Tagliabue. It's been a long quarantine. They have no commissioner. They have no central authority. I think what Emmert did was just get out on Front Street and say, hey, look, we can't solve this process. You know, we really don't have the ability to go to FBS programs and say, you will all do this in lockstep. Because for the first time, that is the 100% truth, transparently, front and back with the NCAA. They really don't have that power.
So we were talking about recruiting and recruiting success stories. Ohio State, obviously, they're going to recruit well. They're number one in the country right now. Tennessee is number two. Number three right now, Godfrey, is North Carolina and Mack Brown. Could you forecast this level of early success for Mack Brown's return to college football and his return to Chapel Hill?
Yeah, maybe not number three, but again, you know, these numbers will regress. obviously, like we've talked about, you know, I don't expect North Carolina to finish the year at number three. I don't expect Tennessee to finish the year at number two. And honestly, maybe even Ohio State's not number one. Usually these early gainers, they kind of fade down the stretch because it's just really about when you catch your verbals and when it averages out. I think all three of these programs we're talking about will finish probably in the top 15 at the lowest, just by virtue of the quality that they've brought in and if they hold the kids. I think North Carolina and Tennessee are very, very different cases. North Carolina is doing off the field what everyone has talked about in order to beat Clemson, Florida State, Miami. And I know you hear Florida State, Miami, you kind of laugh, but like blueprint potential of those schools has not changed. They definitely had some mismanagement issues, some bad leadership, bad coaches, all of that. But like Florida State and Miami, they're still a blueprint to win a national title, right? I don't think anyone would argue that. Clemson became such an outlier in that conference that everyone else kind of looked around and said, like, what of this can we emulate? What, you know, what can we model ourselves after? How do we recruit? And I think, you know, if you grab Barton or one of those guys from 247, they will tell you that Carolina just slowly and just kind of building up in quality. That entire area, North, South Carolina, all the way up to Richmond, Virginia, and then into Atlanta, and the more Atlanta grows, the less one particular program or even one conference can dictate claim to it. So North Carolina is just winning every battle right now. I mean, I know a couple coaches on their staff. There's some former Tennessee guys on that staff. Mac, look, I know everyone took this for granted because he was at Texas. Mac can evaluate. He really can. I know about the Vince Young joke. I mean, I understand all the punchlines. So-and-so is recruited as a defensive back, whatever. I get it. The whole Robert Griffin saga, I get it. But the bottom line is he's still an incredibly good evaluator of talent, and he really is maybe the grandfather model of the CEO style that we talk about today with Dabo Swinney and Ed Orgeron. Mac Brown kind of invented that.
Stephen Godfrey, Banner Society, at 38 Godfrey on Twitter. You can follow him there. Joins us weekly talking college football. Always love the conversation. Godfrey, thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next week.
Live sports on TV tomorrow morning. Team Sports will remind you or fill you in on what it is and where to find it next.
It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Start your day with Mark, Blaine, and Kevin. The Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Weekday mornings at 6 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow, I'm in Mount Juliet, Paul Kraharski in Brentwood, David Reed, downtown Nashville, The Zone Studios. Jonathan Hutton out on furlough this week. He will be back on Monday. So as I mentioned yesterday, it's a reminder that if you hate me or you hate Paul, and especially if you hate both of us together, well, good news. Monday, Jonathan Hutton is back, and I will be out for the week. Especially those who hate me. You'll have a great week next week with me out. So I'm sure you're
looking
forward to that.
Huge Vandy week.
Big Vandy call week next week. It's going to be a celebration of all things Vanderbilt. You guys are going to do 2 straight hours with Tim Corbin at some point in my absence next week. It's going to be great.
He's now being sold by some other shows as a life coach. He's invading Ryan Mudd's territory.
Speaking of other shows, the basis of my primary complaint a week ago was based on something happening on the Wake Up Zone. And I complained about it on there. And I think, Paul, what you want to talk about right now may tie in a little bit to my primary complaint from a week ago. So the floor is yours with this story that you teased coming into the segment.
Well, there's live team sports on tomorrow, live team sports of substance. It may not be your favorite, but internationally important, and important for test case for American team sports and how everything's going to come back together. The Bundesliga restarts tomorrow. Borussia Dortmund and Schalke play at 8:30 a.m. on FS1. RB Leipzig and Freiburg also at 8:30 a.m. on FS2. and we'll tweet out this schedule, but they are resuming their regular season games Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then again on Friday and Saturday next week into Sunday. So a regular schedule of international soccer, the German league, one of the better leagues in the world, and they're the first to restart. So, you know, whether you're a soccer person or not, I mean, some people have been watching Korean baseball. I think if you're watching Korean baseball, which is nowhere near the best baseball in the world, some of the better soccer, some of the best soccer in the world might be of interest to you if you're desperate for sports, if you're desperate to place a bet, and if you're desperate to see how a league gets back up to operation, there's some information to be gleaned here.
Where does Bundesliga rank in terms of global leagues? Is it the third or fourth best? English Premier League is the top.
Well, English Premier League isn't necessarily the top. It's the top seller. But England, Spain,
Italy
and Germany, you would say, are the best. England has the biggest names, generally speaking, and probably Spain. Italy and Germany are right there too.
So my primary complaint last week actually was not about weather. People on Twitter, believe it or not, even though that's what it became. It was about people just, if ESPN sells it as something you should care about or pay attention to, just scooping it right on up and caring about it. And I use the example of Korean baseball. And now I know the Wake Up Zone and Jonathan Schaefer, we talked about this. They were joking. It was in jest when they're picking a favorite team and he's giving updates every day on Korean baseball's scores and everything else. But because ESPN sends Carl Ravich, and he's in a studio calling a game at midnight, and they're making it like it's actually something to hype up and watch. No one cared about Korean baseball before this happened, and no one should care in the United States now, and no one really cares. So just because ESPN says, hey, we have this television product now, it's team sports and it's back, doesn't mean we should care about it. Now, I understand, Paul, you're saying this is one of the top leagues in the world, so it is a high, high level of soccer. And if you're a soccer fan,
there are people who are interested in it before.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what's the percentage? I know a lot of people here locally have their favorite EPL team. How many people have a favorite Bundesliga team? Is that a thing? Do they
not
have
many.
Like bars,
you know,
people gather
the
to
Bundesliga?
Watch?
Brett Kern's into the Bundesliga. I should have thought ahead. He could have come on and given us a Bundesliga review. But there are recognizable names in the league, recognizable the names for soccer people. And it's quality soccer. So if you're a soccer person, you know, I'm not a Bundesliga person, but I'm a soccer person. If I'm up, you know, I'll turn it on. This is the first thing I'd say that about that's gone on since things shut down. It's the first. I'm not going to turn on the race. Is this Darlington or whatever it is tomorrow? I'm not going to turn.
Oh God,
on.
Here we go. Soccer versus NASCAR again. It's the fairgrounds. Speedway confrontation we had recently with different people.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn on these old games that are being rebroadcast.
We can compare Bundesliga versus NASCAR ratings on Monday if you want to, Paul.
Oh, I have no doubt about what those ratings.
I mean, one's in America and one's in Germany. I mean, come on.
There may be more Germans watching NASCAR than they will be watching Bundesliga.
Yeah, I don't. Here's my take on this, Paul, and it ties into my primary complaint. If you're into it before, then you're excited that it's coming back. I don't think people are going to be rushing to watch Bundesliga that didn't care much about it before. If you're a diehard soccer fan, I'm guessing you're probably watching. You know, you and Will Bowling will be watching, I'm sure. But for the majority of people, go back to streaming something on Netflix or listening to our show on podcast or reading a book. And I don't get the whole urge to jump onto something because it's happening. Just like I don't understand anyone caring at all about Korean baseball.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Baseball before.
I'm with you, but here are two things I would make an exception for. I think there will be a wave of people who watch it who are just dying to bet. And so I think there'll be a betting population that usually wouldn't watch it that are into it because
saw
it's
that with UFC, by the way.
Yeah.
UFC event went way through the roof with people betting. Even people probably didn't really care that much about it before.
They need the juice. And then I think there are people who won't necessarily watch the games, but will very eagerly be reading about the after effect of the games, not necessarily the immediate after effect, the after effect of the weekend going into the second weekend and all of that for any COVID developments as to how to reopen a league and what can be gleaned by that, because you know NBA, NHL, MLB, NFL are all watching it in that regard. And there's going to be a lot written in that regard. And so I think at the very least, there's an American interest in that. What can we take from it? And what can we learn from it? And that to me is very interesting, whether you're a soccer person or not.
Certainly could serve as a good case study for sports leagues in America. When we return in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to get back into some headlines, plus John McClain. We can ask him about his story he told on Tuesday about Bud Adams preferring the Pioneers over the Titans. That and more in the 1 o'clock hour coming up. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.